Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, if you can't listen live, know that all of our shows can be found at answers.network. And I'd really appreciate it if you could go to there, check out a couple of shows, and let us know what you think. We're constantly focusing on making changes that we believe will help you and make your life better. Now, I'd also appreciate it if you'd also do me a wonderful favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, it is January, and over the last month or so, I've been asking many people that I hadn't seen in a little while, how was your holidays? Sadly, many of the responses were, well, I survived, followed by a story of distress. Well, as we all know, holidays can be a source of great joy for some, but it can also be a source of trauma for others. Many people were reflecting on their relationships with their families, some asking for the best ways to cope and to manage what sounded like toxic dynamics to me. Now, our guest, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, is here to provide useful resources for those who struggle at any time of the year with family trauma and codependent households. Now, I'll tell you a little about her. Dr. Frieda is a research psychologist and psychoanalytic therapist in New Jersey and the award-winning author of Life Begins at 60, A New View of Motherhood, Marriage, and Reinventing Ourselves, and What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of the Professional Woman in a Relationship. Now, she's an expert on topics such as family dynamics, parenthood, relationships, addiction, anxiety, and depression. Dr. Frieda is a seasoned media personality and commentator who is adept at discerning the psychological underpinnings of current issues and parsing the psychological profiles of various newsmakers, politicians, celebrities, and criminals. Notably, Dr. Frieda is the mother of five. Her youngest sons were born when she was 60. Lending her a unique perspective on issues related to parenting and the empowerment of women at any age. Stay with us as we dive into the complex and fascinating world of codependent families. Dr. Frieda, welcome back to Answers Network.
Thank you so much. My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, let's start with this thing that I was noticing. And for those that know me, they know that I'm in the gym a lot. And I've become one of those that knows not most of the people in the gym, but I see a lot of the same people. So there's this general communication of, hey, how are you? I haven't seen you in a week or so. How was your holidays? I didn't feel like I had heard that many negative or distressful responses as I did this year. So tell me what's going on here.
You know, an awful lot is going on. We're at a time in our lives, generally, that there's a lot of stress. You know, we're talking about inflation, the political divide here, globalization that we've gone into with other countries. It's pretty bad. And then we have to deal with our own personal lives. That's even harder at times. And so you see people that you haven't seen in a while, and that's even more stressful. They want to know, your Aunt Mame or whatever her name is wants to know, how do you have children yet? Did you meet anybody yet? What happened to your job? Are you still working? And they say, oh my God, I have to answer these questions. And some people actually get these partners temporarily for the holidays, believe it or not, to just cover their tracks and not to have to prove anything to anybody. And these relatives that you see once a year, the ones that you do want to see, it's a good time to make contact with, because New Year's resolutions, I know I'm not answering your question, I will in a minute, but New Year's resolutions often are such that, you know, I want to lose weight, so stop overeating during the holidays. And then, again, I want to see certain people, relatives, here's the time to see those people. So there is a time there that you can mend fences and you can really have a lot of these things fixed. Then we go to the gym, okay? That's your area. You know, people don't want to know about what's going on with you. They have their own stuff. They'll say, hi, how are you? You're going to stop and tell them, oh, my goodness, they'll be sorry that you have ever said anything. So, yes, you're right. Everybody's more stressed out today with what's going on. And we have to look at why we have these issues and why do we have these codependency issues that we keep going out there without having the right boundaries. And, you know, everything starts from childhood. Everything starts not necessarily because of our mothers, but it does start because the way we're parented. And the way we're parented often is that we don't have the authority to speak up. And so we marry people or we have partners in our lives that represent those people that we couldn't fix, and we try to fix them. And these poor souls have nothing to do with anything. And that's when problems begin in relationships, because we're blaming this person who doesn't have a history with you. But we have to get it out somewhere. So that's where it starts, these codependency issues with no boundaries and feeling guilt and feeling as if, God forbid, if you do anything to somebody and you're not responsible or overly responsible or forget about your life completely, something horrific is going to happen to that person and you're going to have to bear with it the rest of your life. And this is how we're taught, believe it or not, when we're children, you better. You have to. And so we keep mending this with other people in our lives. And, you know, we end up marrying people that are perfect for our codependency because they're usually narcissistic. So they gaslight you, right? And it's a perfect blend here of being the victims. You have to do this. You have to take care of me. And you, and those people don't want to fix anything. They don't want to fix themselves. They don't want to go to therapy for sure. Why would they? And so you're sort of stuck. And the important thing about that is that they don't take response. You take over responsibility as a codependent. And the other people, the other person goes the other way. They're clueless. I said this, nothing ever happened. So it's a continuum of events.
Well, for those viewers or listeners that don't fully understand the concept of codependency, I'd like you to explain it. But I have an idea on how I think it might be a way that a lot of people could understand. Because I mentioned in an introduction that you've done psychological profiles of various newsmakers, politicians, celebrities. Can you share with us some classic cases of codependency and explain it either with newsmakers or even with fictional, you know, some sort of fictional character, you know, where you take somebody out of a movie that everybody knows and go, here's a classic case of codependency, and then share why that is.
You know, the first person that came to my mind is Whitney Houston, that really, she had a relationship here. She was a celebrity, a star. But she was not that way with her relationships, and she was very passive. And the person that was with her took this initiative to go ahead and control. Women often do that, and then the man, you know, they say, tell me this, help me with this, and then the man starts telling them, they start controlling them, then they blame that the man is controlling them. But they often set it up, too, because they're submissive in the relationship. So a lot of celebrities have that, especially this codependency issue when they don't have the ability to be celebrities anymore because it's a fickle field world. And then what happens, they go and they take drugs to give them that high, believe it or not. It gives them the same high and they become codependent instead of being a celebrity because it's not only about a relationship, it's about events in your life. They become codependent on drugs. So it's always something to be codependent about, which is, of course, addictive, and it's very, very hard to get off of this cycle. So when we marry somebody who's going to be abusive, often we ourselves were victimized as children in some way, emotionally, not necessarily physically, and that keeps going on in a way that it's familiar, because something familiar doesn't mean that it's good for you. It's just familiar, and you keep looking for this type of connection that you know or you feel you deserve to have, because that's the way you were brought up. Your parents are your world to you.
Yeah, and so let's talk about that familiar connection, because I think that's one of the kind of classic cases that people think of when they think of a codependency, and that is where you have a woman who as a child or as a teenager or whatever was abused, and they go out and they find a mate that is also abusive. And I think that it would be interesting to go over, is this something to where you have an abuser that recognizes somebody who has already sort of been trained on how to take it, so he is a predator to her? Or is she looking and seeing that person, seeing that it's familiar, and then wanting to go for it because this is her opportunity to fix it?
It's absolutely both. And when somebody sees somebody who's anxious, depressed, or has a low self-esteem, it's like a predator. You know, that's your opportunity to bounce on that person. Ah, that person's going to treat me like royalty. They want to be able to be looked up to, and that's the narcissist. But the red flag is when people say, you're not acting yourself, you're not looking like yourself, what's going on? That's because that person, that narcissist, wants you all for themselves. They don't want you to have friends. They don't want you to be close to your family, because, of course, everyone's going to say, you're right, he's wrong, and they don't want you to be in the outside world to figure out what's going on around you.
Well, you just touched on some points about the changes in things. Let's talk about what the friends or other family members can look for and how to help somebody, because I agree with you that in many cases they're trying to isolate, because if they can isolate that person, they can handle things any way that they want to. But for those of us that want to protect our family members, protect our friends, let's talk about some of those indicators that we can see. And when we see that, how can we now approach that person or help that person either get out of that situation or change the dynamics of it?
I mean, that person is not acting like themselves. They're not laughing. They're isolating themselves physically from the rest of the people. They're lonely. They're alone. They're loners. Whatever that is, that they're not joining into the group. They're not being verbal, and they'd rather be alone. Then you know there's something going on, that that person's not connecting socially. That person's wounded in some way and is hurting in some way. And so the thing to do is to bring that person up. Actually, asking something so simple as, what's going on? Are you okay? Could be an opportunity for that other person to express themselves, because they're not going to be doing what they were usually doing. They may be on the computer a lot, in their room a lot, and not even being part of the entertainment world, going out to restaurants, activities that they had before, whatever it was that they were doing before, but they're absolutely more into themselves. Then you know that they're affected, and then you know there's definitely something wrong, that they're in a relationship that's abusive.
Well, let's talk about, what are some of the things? So let's say that someone comes to you and she says, I've changed so much, and I went into this situation thinking that I was helping this person, and now I'm 2 years into this, and all of a sudden I'm not in contact with any of my friends. I don't get dressed up anymore. I don't go out, and let's add that he's at the very least verbally abusive. What are some of the things that, from a therapeutic standpoint, that can be done to help that situation, or is it beyond help?
Well, the answer is basically run as fast as you can. That's the answer. Because that other person doesn't want to work with you, doesn't want to work it out. The best thing you can really do is, why did you get into this situation to begin with? And start self-therapy to build up your self-esteem, to say no more often, to say yes to yourself more often. What is it that fills you up? What is it you could do for yourself that you're doing for that other person? Do you enjoy life at all? What kind of people that you feel better with? You know, when you're talking to somebody, and at the end of any kind of conversation, do you feel better about yourself or worse? That's the clue right there. It's very, very simple. And then if you don't know what that's like, you better find out what it feels like to feel good about yourself. You know, you have to check that out.
Well, what I hear you saying, and let's say that we have a married couple, to start off with, you're trying to get into some form of therapy. If that partner is not going to get into therapy with you, you should still get into some form of therapy yourself so that you can develop some of the necessary skills to be able to get out of that situation and to not repeat it. Would that be a good kind of synopsis of what you're saying?
Absolutely, because what happens when we marry somebody that we feel that is going to build us up, but really they want to push you down, and this happens a lot. Oh, that person's not in a good place. They're going to think I'm special. No, that person's going to try to push you down where they are, and that's a big mistake. So if you have a sense of yourself, if you think something of you, then you'll be with somebody who lifts you up, who you want to feel like you can grow with that person. And so something healthy is really each person supporting the other person to grow. Not a one person trying to get the other person down and squash them down so they can be king of the relationship. So that's really what a healthy relationship is. You have to know what healthy is. You have to know that when you're with somebody, sometimes you have to take turns. Sometimes you can't do it together. But you have to have a game plan. What do you want to do? Do you want to work outside mm-hmm. the home? Do you want to get an education? Do you want to grow on with your hobbies? What makes you full? What kind of people do you need around you? And it's not doesn't have to be one or the other. You can compromise, because the best kind of relationships are really ones that where you learn from each other.
Well, the a lot of the situations that you're describing, I think the way in which I saw some of these type of family dynamics was working with at-risk youth. And what we would see, you know, we're brought into a situation to work with a young person who is either abusing drugs or acting out in some way, either violently hurting themselves or hurting others. And in many of these cases where we would then be asked to take a closer look at what's going on in the home, what we would see is this type of relationship you're describing. So let's talk about that. This doesn't just, so if you have somebody that's in this situation, it's not just affecting you. If you have children, you are affecting them as well. And share with us a little bit on that part of this.
You know, it's it used to be more so, and hopefully it's getting less so the case. But, you know, the divide of the sexes, a young girl is brought up to nurture and to be a caretaker, and a young boy is taught up to go outside into the world and to get his needs met. So right away, there's a deficit. And mm-hmm. so if a father especially, and by the way, men have more an effect on their children than women do. So let's start blaming the father instead of the mother in therapy. We're going in the wrong direction here. It's not always the woman who's at fault, because today the man has become more of a nurturer. But then when a young woman is becoming of age and has developed, a different appearance, that's when she gets attention, often even from her father. And that's sort of unhealthy. What about getting attention, supporting a young woman in math, in tennis, athletic ability, mm-hmm. Mental ability, capacity? Even the school system has to change. They did research and they said that young boys are called on much more than girls in school. And they're taught and they're helped much more than girls. So that's something of a mindset where the teachers need to be able to look at the divide of the sexes and to give equality. But then again, it is getting better. Colleges, 60% of the universities are filled with women. So just think about that. How great is that? And so it does boil down to a sense of self-esteem with my book, What Price Power. Women that had higher status careers were listened to more and had more, made more decisions across the board, not only with her career, but at home with her husband. So that makes a difference. I mean, my husband still has a habit, I just flashed on me, that he looks at his watch when I talk to him, and I could kill him for doing this, you know, whatever that is. So that's something that drives me crazy. But yes, yeah, so when you have a high status career, you are looked at differently. And so education is extremely important. When we parent our children, what that means that they should see both people involved and nurturing as well. And children who have mothers who are out there in the workforce, girls, tend to duplicate that and to replicate that, I mean, and to do that. And then these young boys who have mothers who are out there in the workforce marry women similar to that too. So that has a lot to do with codependency. Because when you're going for, when I remember when I was going for my PhD, as I'm talking to you, I said to my mentor, what do I do? And she says, if you have to ask me, then you don't belong here. So I said, oh my God. So right away, it gives you leadership qualities to think for yourself. So yes, it did help me to have that kind of capacity to be able to trust yourself, to know that you're the leader, and maybe, hey, you know more than other people know. So all these codependency issues are based on the way you look at yourself, the way you were brought up, the way you educate yourself. And then all of a sudden, wait a minute, people are listening to you. You do have something to say that does make a difference. You don't need somebody else to validate who you are. And that's a wonderful place to be in.
You know, you brought up a term that I love, which is leadership. And I've had many people on that are incredible at teaching leadership and how important it is that we teach leadership. You're mentioning some things, you know, about the schools, and I've never thought of it this way, but could part of the problem or the increase in codependency come from a lack of leadership being taught, where the schools, in their form of wanting to, to train followers, are not giving the leadership training that they should be getting to not only lead in a business, but those same things can be used to lead in your home, be it a man or a woman. So do you think that we're also maybe falling behind in that area?
Well, you're very fast because that's a brilliant question. Let me tell you, that's a brilliant question. Exactly that. They teach you in school to be followers and they push you out and say, okay, now be a leader. It's like, you know, you're on the slope skiing and they say, okay, now you can do it. No. What do you do? It's very scary. So yes, schools are antiquated. Absolutely. You know, memorization, what does it really do for you? It makes you want to cheat because you're not getting anything out of it anyway. So they are teaching you to be codependent in school. Be a good child, listen to everything, and you'll be fine. No, it doesn't work in the world. Do you know the highest grades, the kids that get the highest scores are not the ones from our country.
That's right.
They're not from, and those kids are taught to love school. They don't have these large classes. They get off at 3 o'clock. They play. They don't have homework. My kids have to study and memorize every night. What is it about? Go to school. You're finished. Then it's over for the day. You bring it home with you. And then again, you have to do that. You have no time to have space for your brain to have fun. Having fun and having that pause really reignites you to think clearer about everything that you need to think about. We should have hobbies. We should have fun times. Yep. That's what school should be all about, because that's what life is about. You know, delayed gratification is one of the biggest mistakes men, especially women now, also make. It's, you know, when are we going to have fun already? No, we have to make the money so we don't have time to have fun. Duh, stop doing that. And you have time to forget about the big expenses that you're so codependent on, because it's not only relationship. You know, addictions are codependency. Forget about all that. Time is your best asset, really. And have that free time. Even if you play in the backyard with your kids, you're better off than not having time for them so you can go to Hawaii once a year. You know, it's my venting to you, but it's true. That's what schools are doing. They're misguiding these kids to be listeners, not to be leaders.
Well, and I'm glad that we're on this part of it, because it's a pet peeve for me as it relates to education. So I study education as it's happening in other countries. And when you said that, you know, most of those kids that are getting the better grades now were not raised here. And I think part of that is that at the earliest of ages, the education in many other countries is so focused, like you said, it's on play therapy, it's on you know, leadership, it's on learning how to socialize. There's so many other things involved than just memorization. So I think that's one point. Another has to do with I was reading or listening to Elon Musk talk about his hiring practices, and he said he does not hire A students. He said he hires the B and the C students because of the fact that they did not focus on how much of this can I memorize and how good a follower can I be. I want somebody who's more of a leader and that's going to think more independently. And in doing so, I'm finding that the A students are not them. I think that's huge.
That's amazing. So he really thinks out of the box.
Yes.
He definitely doesn't follow any rules, which is wonderful for us. And so when we're looking at, you know, how to go about this and what is it really all about? You know, I have a patient who is a billionaire, and he was all C students. And as I said, how did you get to this place that he is a owns or president of a stock company. Stock. So he said, he told everybody, treat me like I'm stupid and you do everything. So what was that all really all about? He could conceptualize, but he didn't memorize. So he saw the bigger picture, and these people who were brilliant, and he hired the best, who were very detail oriented and were wonderful students, they did not see the big picture. So really, that's what you need to be, is a visionary about life. And then when you have that, then everything comes together when you bring that along. So yes, Elon Musk is somebody who doesn't go ahead and follow the rules, who he's somebody who listens to the fact that this is what I need to do. And by the way, you know, when his company Tesla, now that other people are copying it, he's saying, great, the more people that copy it, the better it is. He's not competitive. It's just a pleasure. He's on to the next project.
Exactly.
That's what you have to do. You have to keep growing within yourself, not comparing yourself, not competing with anybody else, not trying to be the best you can. And the student mindset, these people in Finland or wherever they are, their parents, these kids' parents, they also live by this rule. Their parents get out at 3 o'clock. They don't, they have time to go to the coffee shops and go biking with them or hiking, whatever that is. They get together as a family unit and they have fun together. So it's not only the students, it's just the way the whole country is set up to function, that they're allowed to have family time, time off for parenting, as years off for parenting. So all this, is, you know, when you have that kind of space, you come back like the 4-day work week, you come back more energized,
not refreshed. Energized
and refreshed. Absolutely. Yeah.
We're going to take a break, but I've got a instant message question that has come in from a 40-year-old divorced woman And I want to go into that. So, but for everybody out there, stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practiced lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We are speaking once again with Dr. Frieda Birnbaum. And this time we're talking about the complex and fascinating world of codependency. And we've been going into a lot of different directions, but we have a question that's coming in. And again, I want to take this time to thank those that take the time to send these in. This one reads, I'm a 48-year-old divorced woman with two grown children and consider myself a good person. I've been dating for about 5 years and seem to fall in love with men with problems. They seem to like that I don't judge them and try to help. I seem to thrive on being needed, but in each case, after a while, they seem to take me for granted until I start feeling like I'm losing myself, which then makes me frustrated and resentful. What can I do differently? And this is from Carolyn in Portland, Oregon.
Well, if you make everybody else more important than you, you can't blame them for disrespecting who you are. We have to start respecting ourselves first. So that's very obvious. You need to know that if you are dating somebody who presented themselves as they didn't have a sense of themselves, and you're more important, well, guess what? You're going to become and act more important. So you have to start seeing yourself as somebody who needs other people in your life to be part of your life in such a way where they give you energy, where they make a difference to you. And you have to be obvious about it. You have to speak up about it. What is your game plan 5 years from now? What do you think you can offer me? What do you think that is going to be something that's going to be good for us as a couple? In other words, what I'm talking about is you have to have your own demands. And that doesn't mean you're selfish. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you're needy. On the contrary, it means that you don't want to waste your time. And because of that, they'll respect you because you think something of yourself. If you think you're a worthwhile person, if you feel you have something to offer, you don't have to try to get approval. On the contrary, you have to get them to give you approval. You have to get them to give you an opportunity to evaluate them and to see whether you approve of them. So it's really the opposite of what you're doing. Instead of trying to get this approval, mm-hmm. see what you think of them. Are they good enough for you? That's where it really starts.
I love that. And especially the part about, yes, they do need to be loving themselves. It actually reminds me a little bit of a story in regards to the part about who are you drawing? After I went through a divorce, I met a man who was telling me how great his second marriage was. And he said that what he realized that he needed to do was that he needed to put together what he wanted in life and what he wanted in a mate. And so he had this, it was two pages, and it went through, you know, what he wanted in a mate from the standpoint of, you know, emotionally, spiritually, physically. Anyway, he went through all of these things and he explained all of it. And I got excited. I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And I put all of that together. And I looked at it, and it's typed up, it's in my computer. I even put it in categories, very excited about it. And I read it again. and I set it aside and I did a new one. And the new one was, who is it that I need to be to deserve that person that I just typed up? And I think if this, and Carolyn, if I understand, you know, what Frida is saying, Frida, would you agree that that's kind of one of the changes she needs to make in herself?
Yes, you know, you have to know how to get what you want. And mm-hmm. how to get what you want comes back to how to get yourself prepared to be able right. to be aware and have the credibility to get it to begin with. You know, it's interesting because on another topic, I always tell my patients if they want to know how to make more money, I would say, what would your life be like if you had more money? Then find a way to get it. Okay, the same thing with this. You know, what would you be? What would it be like to find the right partner? Well, find a way to be that person so you can get that partner. It's there the same thing. You have to go back to yourself and to know, number one, as you're saying, you deserve it. You're deserving. To get somebody that can be compatible with who you are, not that you have to be grateful, but the fact that you can be with somebody that can represent who you are. So, of course, you have to be healthy first to meet somebody healthy. And what that means, it doesn't mean being selfish. It means that you have to feel entitled to get all these things. So then you meet somebody who feels entitled but who's not threatened. So there's right. a difference between meeting somebody who's needy and who wants to squash you down, but to meet somebody who you feel is good, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. and you should be able to live up to those expectations yourself. You can't meet somebody unless you're in that the right place. So that's what your listener should know. Get it together. Know you deserve somebody that has it going, and then ask all the right questions. I don't want children. I want children. Where do you want to live? How often do you want to go on vacation? How do you want to spend your money? Are you a saver? Are you a spender? All those things. You know, money is the number one reason why people get divorced. You know, aside from infidelity.
Well, money. Yeah. What I was going to say, as soon as you said that, I was going to say, at least back when I was in school, in college, as a psychology major, at that time, which is many, many years ago, we were told that infidelity was one and finance was two. But
finance was two. Well, today, my goodness, the laws have changed. You can do whatever you want to and they won't hold it against you. Don't tell anybody, but it's true. And that's very sad because when you're intimate with somebody else, and this is something that I feel, it just breaks that bond between the two of you. I don't know if you could ever get back together the same way, even if you work on it. I mean, I've helped many people have had affairs. In my office, they announce it, which is a lot of fun. Oh. You know, I say, oh, what do I do now? And somehow they're together, you know, by I don't know how, but we worked on it. And yes, so getting back to, because I'm distracting myself with what I'm saying, getting back with why do you keep meeting the wrong one? Why do you keep doing the wrong things? Get it together. You have to be the one who attracts somebody who's worthwhile and who's somebody who's not going to want to be better than you. You want somebody who's you can say, hey, wait, that person has a lot to offer. I can really feel good about that person. And then when you do meet that right person, be careful because you can mess it up anyway. If you meet the right person and you say the wrong things, they may have an invested interest. Be careful for you not to feel like you're so special. The minute that happens, you leave that person and you meet somebody who wants to keep you where they are. Once you have that, meeting the right person and having the right relationship with that person, because that's just as important, then you have to maintain it, which means self-respect. Have time for yourself. Don't be somebody who's just clutching onto that other person. Women marry somebody who is all of them, often, I'm not saying. Mm-hmm. And men marry somebody who's part of who they are. And that's when the problem begins. And then the woman wants to change the man who never changes. And the man, you know, is with the woman he likes her the way she is, and she changes. And that happens all the time. So these problems are set up to happen. So you have to be able to always, marriage is work. It is work. I've been married for a long time. I'm working very hard all the time. Many times I think, okay, today I'm out of here. That's it. But then I have something to do. I say, okay, I'm leaving. This is it. Now I have a real reason. I'm out of here. And then I have something, some errand, some stupid thing to do. They say, I can't leave today, whatever. So there's always some reason why you want to get out of there. But you have to know the basic rules. And that is, as I said before, you feel better about yourself when you're with that person than you're with that right person. And really, the important thing is, before any of this happens, you have to know what it is you want and who you really are. And you have to be happy. You can't look for somebody to make you happy. You know, when I was single ages and ages ago, which is prehistoric time, when I was then, just to get a sense of who I am, if you can't see me, you know, I was really looking for that person to make me happy. But I noticed when I was happiest, when I felt best about myself, all of a sudden, all these guys were around. I was attracting these guys. I'm walking in Manhattan, some good-looking guy. I almost fell over. I couldn't breathe when I saw him. I was like 19 years old. And he stopped and says, you know, you really look good today. I said, oh, my God, I almost fell over. I could hardly move my legs or feet after he said that. But that's because I was happy about myself at that time. So you have to be in a good place.
Well, speaking of being happy, we have another question that has come in, and this one reads, I'm a 32-year-old man who has been happily married for 4 years. We had our first child 6 months ago, and my mother does not seem to know how to maintain healthy boundaries with my wife. My mom can't seem to stop telling my wife how to do nearly everything. From parenting to house maintenance, she can't keep her opinion to herself. It is now affecting my wife and my relationship. It's seeming like whatever I do, one or the other is upset with me. And this is from Robert Out of Ideas in San Francisco, California.
All right, Robert Out of Ideas. The first thing you have to do, guess what? It's you and your wife now. It's not you and your mother. You are not married to your mother. You have to be careful. I know you have a history with your mother, and I know you love your mother, but it's different. And no matter what, nothing should come between you and your wife. And It's even good to stand up for your wife in front of your mother and your wife. You put your arm around your wife and you say, this is who I'm married to. This is our relationship. We're very happy. We don't want to mess it up. So if you're upsetting my wife, you're upsetting me. And this is not good for us. So always go back to the premise, no matter who's involved with you, your mother or somebody else, the relationship between the couple is what always comes first. And I know it's always very confusing because I get this question a lot. But because your mother brought you up and she was unconditional and loved you and gave you everything. But well, then again, yes.
What are some examples of things, because I would imagine you've had some clients that have had similar situations. What are some examples of some things that others have done that has moved things in the right direction in the situation Robert's in?
I just spoke to somebody this morning. It's crazy. So after 32 years, he finds out he has a son from somebody he had a one-night stand with. You know, I've heard everything in here. And his wife is very upset because they're at a stage in their life now where they have everything and they're very happy. So this young man comes into their lives and he wines and dines them. They go, he takes them to a trip to Italy with him as well, with this newfound son and his wife. And the wife, yeah.
Well, Frieda, let me ask a question because I'm not sure if I caught everything. You froze for a moment, and I don't want to have missed something in the math.
Okay.
Okay, a 32-year-old son. How long has this man been married to his wife?
I don't know exactly how long, but for a long time. This is before the marriage.
Okay, that's my question, before the marriage. But because you froze, I went, is this before or after the marriage? Because I'm thinking in two different ways, depending on which it is. But so this is something that was before he met and had a relationship with his current wife.
Yeah, 32 gotcha. Years. Only I have been married longer than that. But other than that, this is before. It was a one-night fling. He didn't know about it. And by the way, this young man thought this other person was his father. So that's that's what happened. And so they came to me. And what was your initial question? Because I don't want to go off of the point.
I think you're right on target, because what it is that what are some of the things that a person can tell their parent, or in a relationship that you can tell somebody else, you know, look, I love you, but this is my relationship. This is my situation. And be able to not have to give up somebody in your life just to make one person happy.
So this was very complicated, this situation, where this young man, you know, was looking to bond with his father and vice versa. And his father, my patient, had an upbringing where he felt rejected. And so he really acknowledged and understood and wanted to rescue and save this person who was rejected, who didn't have a real father. So it was very complicated. And actually, the wife just came on to therapy with me. And the truth is, was he wrong in going ahead and doing all these things for this person? No. Mm-hmm. But was he wrong in not finding out about his wife's feelings and her pain, which she was going through, and her own rejection? Yes. So we have to. So that's the example. Even with anybody, you have to go back to your spouse, because she was somebody that was neglected. Now, the history of these people, and if they're not listening because you're over there and we're over here, is that she had an affair with a dentist. So it's not these sessions are not easy. And he found that out in my office. And dentists, by the way, have the highest rate of fooling around than most professions. Dentists, they're very bored looking at your teeth all the time. Dentists. Wow. So yes. So she was about the third person that came to me. One, a young woman, was having an affair with a married man. She was married and he was married. So, you know, he had already, he really was burnt by that itself. But no matter what happens in a relationship, no matter how much you disagree with your spouse, no matter what your spouse did, how much therapy, how angry you are, you have to go back to this place and this person, because if you're married, you have to work on the marriage. That's really where the work is, more than the children or more than this young adult who came into his life. Because, you know, you role model your behavior. That's what children pick up, not what you say, what you do. You could say, you know, the death of a salesman. You know, he told his child, I don't know, I think of these things that come out from somewhere. He said, what is she talking about? But the death of a salesman, what was his name? I don't know. Just go out there and charm them, right? Well, it didn't work. And it didn't work for the father either. And then the friend who studied, who was a lawyer, did well. So you do role model your parents, not what they say so much. And so this situation with this young man that came in, and yes, if his wife would have agreed with it, it's not really a dilemma whether she agrees or not, whether he should see this person or not. It's whether the wife agrees or not. Really, that's where it is.
Yeah, and what?
There's no right or wrong here.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that. I was going to say it isn't that it's wrong, but you still need to recognize the comfort zone of your spouse. And with that, Frida, I got to tell you, time flies by when we're together, and I love it. I love your movie references and everything. If anybody's out there and they're listening right now and they're thinking, you know, I want to talk to her more, I want to read one of her books, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, I do have a website that's not updated. So I have about 20 shows I have to put on there. So I'm so bad at this stuff. So it's the Dr. Frida, DrFrieda.com. I do have a podcast, by the way, also that hasn't been updated lately.
Yes. Busy.
And it's the Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R-F-R-I-E-D-A show. If you have any questions, you could contact me, my email, D-O-C-T-O-R-F-R-I-E-D-A show. And we're trying to develop a show, The Emotional Prenup, where instead of having a financial prenup, I never got it. I never understood it. Before you get married, you talk about divorce and how you get, you know, if I had a good deal, I may not get married. I'll just get the divorce and take the money. So I always wondered about that. So we have, it's in the look, we're scouting around the emotional prenup.
I love that title. I would love to talk to you more about that.
What do you do to make the marriage work rather than what do you do if you get a divorce? To me, it seemed obvious. And one day we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I would like that. Who knows? There may be something you'll go, you know what? Let's put an international detective on and talk about that.
For sure.
Again, Frida, thank you so much for coming on. Please stay in touch and let me know how that goes. And when the next thing's going, let's talk about it some more.
Love to. Love you. Thank you so much. You're a fantastic interviewer. I want everyone to know.
Thank you.
Spontaneous. You're not scripted. You make it easy. It's a great discussion. It's fun. That's it.
I love it, and I appreciate that very much.
Love you. Thank you.
Take care. For everybody out there, be with us next week as we're joined by Joanne Menon, and she discusses aligning souls through spiritual psychology and A Course in Miracles. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many other popular podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review, leave a comment. But I just got a message from somebody who promotes podcasts, and he said, I listen to your podcast, and I think it's great. He said, but you don't have that many comments. So he said, either you're not being controversial enough or you're doing such a good job that nobody has questions. So I hope it's the second. But for everybody out there, I would love it if you could leave some comments. I think there's always room for improvement. And also remember, stop by our page. Check out some of our latest shows. You can do that through Instagram, Facebook, or X. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.